Blog Talk Radio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Radio Jihadists. You're back with ACT Radio Jihad, your patriotic resistance movement. I'm Beto Esposito, and thank you for joining us tonight. With me is that no pork eating America lover, Alan Kay. Alan.
America and Israel Akbar to you, Beto. It's great to see you again.
Nice to see you. And we also have our resident Islamic scholar, Andy Kay.
Hello.
Salami and cheese to you, Andy.
Thank you.
Well, you know, we really have to start off by wishing Rivka Barry a happy birthday. Today she turns 18 years old. And for those of you who may not be up to speed on a Rivka Barry, but she was the 17-year-old girl from Columbus, Ohio area who converted to Christianity. She feared for her life from her Muslim parents. They were traditionalists from Sri Lanka. She fled to Florida. Outside of Orlando, befriended by a pastor and his wife, Blake and Beverly Lorenz. They did the right thing. They called the Orlando police because of the threats that she felt and the fear for her life, because as you know, in Islam, if you convert to Christianity from Islam, the penalty for apostasy is death. Don't let them sugarcoat it, ladies and gentlemen. The penalty for apostasy is death. So a long trial drawn out. She was with Florida DCF, the Department of Children and Families. She had her couple of days in court. The family came down from Columbus, Ohio. And Al, correct me if I'm wrong. Mohammed and Aisha Barry, they claimed indigency. So the courts appointed an attorney, and then guess what? Their financials came out and found that Mohammed Barry had committed al-Taqiyya. He forgot that he made $250,000 the previous year, and he was not indigent. So the court-appointed attorney gets 86th, and guess what? They appoint a Muslim attorney by the name of Cheyenne Elahi. And I read in the Orlando Sentinel today, and it says that an Orlando lawyer who represents Rivka's parents is running for judge in the Orange Osceola Circuit. The case, he said, was a shock to my conscience as an attorney. Now, he says the Barry parents, they're very heartbroken, and their Orlando attorney, Cheyenne Elahi, it's a tragedy, a family tragedy of Shakespearean proportion. The family could have been healed had these outsiders not intruded where they did not belong. So for you non-Muslims out there, all of us infidels, if we had not interfered, they could have taken care of Rivka Barry, and we would have never heard from her again. They could have applied Sharia law to that. Imagine an attorney who's now running for a circuit court judge in Orange and Osceola County, Florida, said that they could have been healed had the outsiders not intruded where they did not belong. Wow.
So the question is, where did they belong then, if you're going to say
exactly
that?
We belonged on the outside, Andy. The infidels, the kuffars, really had no place in intervening in this type of thing. I mean, it's Sharia law. It's not U.S. Constitution, the man-made law. It's not the fact that Blake and Beverly Lorenz, who believe in Jesus Christ, who know Jesus Christ as a man of peace and love, versus Muhammad, a man of terror and fright.
Yeah. That pretty much sums it up.
So happy
he said,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to follow through on the outsiders comment. Can you repeat that one more time, please?
Yeah. Cheyenne Elahi said, it's a tragedy, a family tragedy of Shakespearean proportion. This family could have been healed had these outsiders not intruded where they did not belong.
And then the next question is, define healing.
Well, healing would have been what the family was trying to do, according to news reports, is that they wanted a reconciliation. They wanted their daughter, Rivka Barry, back. So so the family could immediately leave for Sri Lanka. And then that would have been the healing process. Unfortunately, and if she went back to Sri Lanka, she would be more than likely
dead.
The punishment for apostasy, of course, is death. When a person who has reached puberty and is sane voluntarily apostatizes from Islam, he deserves to be killed. That was her crime, and more than likely, when she went back to Sri Lanka, the sentence would have been carried out in a Sharia court in Sri Lanka. That is healing. End of story.
You know, hey, Al, I don't know if you remember this, and I don't know, Andy, I don't know if you had gotten this, but last year, Tom Trento of the Florida Security Council, didn't he do some sort of a Google Earth search? And didn't he find that where the parents and the relatives lived in Sri Lanka, that there are no non-Muslims in that area, and that she most certainly would have faced the harshest of the Islamic terms for leaving the Islamic faith and converting to Christianity. I remember those Google
yep.
Earth pictures, and he outlined everything that mm-hmm. there is no in Sri Lanka, in the area they lived, it's all Muslim. It's all Islamic belief.
You're absolutely correct. And in addition to that, Mr. Trento received a email. It was actually a death threat against Rivka Berry, and they did an IP ping search. And the email originated from that same town in Sri Lanka.
No,
talk about a smoking gun.
Yeah, and it was submitted into evidence in the latest court trial, which was probably very strong evidence as to why reconciliation could not happen between Rivka Berry and her parents. So therefore, according to Shaitan Alahi, no healing took place. Rivka Berry is free. They tried to paint her as an incorrigible child, but the article doesn't say that she also graduated valedictorian of her class up in Ohio.
She graduated valedictorian?
Valedictorian. She was also diagnosed with uterine cancer. And when a young girl gets uterine cancer at such a young age, it's usually due to some type of sexual abuse as a child, as a young child.
Which,
gee. Go ahead.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because, you know, not to make light of this, but her parents are Muhammad and Aisha. And we all know the story with Muhammad and Aisha, the one from history.
Why don't you go ahead and repeat that story for
sure.
Folks who may not know?
Well, you mentioned sexual abuse, and I should bring this up. Sexual abuse is very common in Islamic countries. It's just not acknowledged. It's kind of like President Ahmadinejad's statement, there are no homosexuals in Iran. Well, that's actually very incorrect. Iran actually has a very, very long history of transvestism as well as homosexuality, but especially under the current Iranian government, it's simply not talked about. It's suppressed. It exists, but according to the official government position and the societal position, it's not there. It's also like the drug problem in Iran, for instance. 5% of Iran's population are opium addicts or opium or heroin addicts of some capacity, but that doesn't exist because it's not talked about. This goes out throughout most Muslim countries because there's this idea of presenting an image of perfection while just throwing under the rug, as we would say, completely covering up imperfections or real problems. And one of the biggest problems, as with any society, but especially in the Muslim world, is sexual abuse. And the reason that sexual abuse is a prevalent problem is because, you know, I give an example. People in the West, a lot of times they'll look at Catholic priests and they'll laugh at them saying, oh, priests are pedophiles, they prey on children. To the Catholic Church's credit, as well as to all of Christianity, that does not teach molestation of children or does not encourage in any sort of way. And throughout history, it never has and never will because it goes against everything of what it means to be a Christian, a Catholic, Protestant, whatever. In the case with Islam, though, Muhammad was very much indeed a sexual abuser, and he had many sexual problems. And one of the biggest ones was with Aisha. Now, she was a six-year-old girl who was the daughter of Abu Bakr, one of Muhammad's followers. One of his most devoted followers, the follower who would actually become the next caliph after Muhammad died. He would take charge of the Islamic State. And Muhammad wanted to marry his daughter when she was six. So the story goes that and this is recorded in the hadith of Bukhari and Muslim, that Aisha was playing with her dolls one day, and Abu Bakr took her away and said, "You are now going to be betrothed to Muhammad." And Muhammad married her. And the way the story goes, Muhammad did not consummate, actually have full sexual penetration with Aisha until she was 9 years old. Now keep in mind, that would have meant Muhammad would have been 54. So Muhammad was 51 and Aisha was 6 when he married her. However, at the same time, it has also been acknowledged by Muslim scholars through fatwas and through other hadith and through Islamic tradition that Muhammad engaged in what is called al-mufakhidha. Now, al-mufakhidha basically is, and if you have any children listening to this, please, please, please take them off the radio or take them away from it because this is not appropriate. It did happen and needs to be talked
Five,
about.
Four, three, two, one. Go ahead.
And al-mufakhidha is basically means thighing, and it was where Muhammad would pleasure himself on the thighs or other body parts of Aisha until to full arousal. She would do this. And this has been repeated in many fatwas, as even today, as something that is acceptable and approved. So these things happen in the Muslim world. I mean, we see child brides in the Muslim world, when we hear about 40-year-old men marrying 5-year-old girls, this isn't a joke. This is based on the example of Muhammad. So sexual abuse is a very real problem. And I say Muhammad and Aisha because Rivka Berry's parents are Muhammad and Aisha, and there seems to be a parallel, at least in the names of the two people from the past. Now, we cannot prove that her parents did sexually abuse her, but as you said, girls who develop uterine cancer often have been sexually abused, and sexual abuse is very prevalent in Orthodox Muslim circles and among people who follow Islam because of Muhammad's example. It's just simply not acknowledged.
Wow. Well put.
Thanks.
That's what people don't understand. It's not something that we're pulling out of thin air. It's something that is written. It's in the Hadith. It's in the Bukhari. It's in their holy book. And they want to sit there and they say, the Islamists say, well, you know, the Quran, oh, it's a book of peace. Well, if you're following the tenets of Muhammad and you're following what Muhammad stood for, who was a murderer, a marauder, killed, what, the Quraishi tribe, 800 males, chopping their heads off, marrying a 6-year-old at age 53. You know, this is not something that's being made up. And under today's standards, marrying a 6-year-old girl at age 53, that's known as pedophilia.
Yeah, it really is. It's pedophilia. And the idea is less that, you know, we talk about differences between men, older men marrying younger women. The idea is that the younger woman would be at least menstruating so that she'd be able to bear children. So the idea of marrying a younger woman would be able to bear children. But that's precisely the problem with Aisha, is that Aisha was not menstruating either. Yes. That's the whole issue. If she was menstruating, then, which some Muslim scholars have tried to argue, then there is something of a possible legitimacy that can be developed for that. But the problem is she was not menstruating, and even in the books of menstruation, there's actually books about menstruation written in the Hadith, that it is permissible, and it has been determined through Muslim scholars and Islamic researchers that it is possible for a man to have relations with a woman who has not yet reached puberty, based on Muhammad's example.
Well, think about this: a six-year-olds they're just getting into the first grade of elementary school. 9-year-olds, of course, are getting into third grade. At that time, to put it into modern day, Muhammad was approximately 51 to 53 years old when he started courting Aisha. That's a 51-year-old man going to an elementary school and having sexual fantasies about a first-grade girl.
And then acting upon them.
It's disgusting. And Islamists believe that Muhammad, as you said, is the greatest example of man to be emulated by all.
Yep.
That is not the behavior of a prophet. That's the behavior, as you said, Vito, of a pedophile, and it disgusts me to no end.
Yeah, that is what we would call pedophilia. I mean, we have to remember, in Islam, Muhammad is regarded as al insan al kamil, the perfect man, the perfect man. As you said, he is the quintessential example for humankind. For all men throughout time and history to follow. He is greater than Jesus, than Moses, than all the prophets that came before him. So now think about that. Think about that. Would Jesus do that? Would Moses do that? Did Abraham do that? These people, would they do these things? Well, the answer is no. Would even regular people, regular everyday Joes, would they do that? No, because there's something intrinsically wrong about it.
For any age, any day, any time, it doesn't matter whether it was 1,400 years ago or today. Like you said, it's intrinsically wrong.
Yes. Well, Al, you were told that women matured faster in the desert, so that was the comeback on one Islamist to you.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I was shocked.
Yeah. But don't live in the deserts of Oklahoma, Texas. Certainly not in the
open. Yeah, no, Vito, the story is accurate. We were doing a tabling at one of the local colleges, and I brought up the Muhammad and Aisha story. They have a nice flyer on it. I call it a Muhammad and Aisha, a twisted love story in any age. And he tried to justify Muhammad's actions for trolling for a first grader and then consummating the marriage when she was in third grade. He said, yep, women age faster in the desert. And that gave that type of behavior justification.
Exactly, Matt. And that's exactly, and that's permissible because...
We're trying to figure that out.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Al, you know, on a serious note, what's not being reported, and you brought this up, it's just kind of sticking in my head here, is the issue that, you know, Rivka Barry had cervical cancer or treated for cervical cancer, and it's a sign of sexual abuse, huh? I wasn't
right.
Aware of that.
Yeah, and Andy confirmed it.
Yeah.
It's true.
It is a sign of sexual abuse. There's a lot of signs, but this is one of them. And it is an interesting point that you mentioned, Al, why that was not brought up in the news more often, because it could show that, like I said, we cannot prove it from where we are right now, but it opens up the door for the possibility of consideration that Rivka may have been raped by her parents, by a sibling, by a relative, by a member of the Muslim community. I mean, we don't know, but it would, for looking at this from the perspective of, say, a social worker, that's definitely something that has to be considered. You know, I'm sure you guys are taught in the workplace, if you encounter a child or a person who has bruises on them or appears to have signs that there may have been some kind of physical abuse or something happening at home, you're by law required to report that to the state. In the same case, this is another issue of something that might possibly have to be reported, not out of trying to nose into people's privacy, but because it is a real sign. Because, simply put, young girls around the age of 18 don't normally develop uterine cancer, as you said, and the many of them that do, do so because of sexual abuse.
Right.
Well, you know, I I'm troubled about this comment, really troubled about this comment by the attorney Elahi. The family could have been healed had these outsiders not intruded where they did not belong. And isn't that an abrogation of Sharia law versus man-made law versus United States Constitution versus this child's rights? I mean, that has to be he's got to be an advocate for Sharia law, especially if he's defending these parents in the court of law, the parents whose belief is based on Sharia law, it's based on Islamic law. That's a troubling statement.
Oh, on a number of levels. I mean, it's okay because, you know, every person in court needs a defense, but this guy, Shaitan Elahi, he he knew he was in agreement with the Barrys. And to make that comment, you're right. It says that this case should have been handled in a Sharia family court rather than in a juvenile court here in the United States.
Yeah. We are outsiders.
And if it was handled in a Sharia court, everybody knows what would have happened, because Sharia court, based on Islamic law, it naturally defers to Islamic orthodoxy inherently.
Right.
So there would be no way that any kind of objective decision that could be made, at least from a legal point of view, because it would be filtered through the window of Islamic law.
Right. And plus, Shaitan just alienated 98% of the population of Central Florida by calling all of us who just happen to be non-Muslim outsiders. Well, Shaitan, screw you.
Yeah, I agree, man. That's just it. It's absolutely, it's incredible. What a statement to make. And I hope that the people of Orlando, of Central Florida, have read the article by Renee Stutzman of the Orlando Sentinel. She puts it right in black and white. She quotes him verbatim. So it's an interesting article. I'm surprised that Renee Stutzman wrote this article. She has not been this open through the whole Barry case. She seemed pretty ignorant, as a matter of fact, of Islamic law.
Well, that, and she was anti-Rifka Barry all through everyone, as she was reporting this case from the very beginning. She was anti-Rifka Barry. There was nothing this poor girl could do right. And now that she's finally reached the age of maturity, she writes a level-headed piece. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. You know, there was a couple of Sentinel wannabe journalists who tried to write articles, and they had absolutely no reason to them. You couldn't reason with them. You couldn't talk to them. It was their way or it was no way. They were the experts, and they had nothing to offer. And I'm very surprised at the article. It's actually a pretty good article.
Yeah, I got to give her that.
Well, you know, some sad news out of Texas today. Actually, it came out yesterday, I believe. Nidal Hassan, you know, the Muslim terrorist who slaughtered 13 soldiers and police officers and wounded 32 people at Fort Hood on November 5th, 2009. The sad news is that Nidal Hassan, who attained the rank of a major, and you can't call him a major anymore, but he can't find a bank to cash his $6,000 a month Army checks. You know, he's still siphoning off of taxpayers' money because he's not been found guilty or tried and found guilty yet of the murders of the 13 fellow soldiers or police officers and wounding 32 people. The Bank of America sent him a letter stating that they no longer want him to be a client of theirs to find another bank, and he's going, I guess his attorney's going all throughout Central Texas, and nobody wants Nidal Hassan as a client. He can't get his toaster. My goodness. Do you really feel bad about it? Taxpayers are still giving him $6,000 a month. The poster boy for moderate Islam stood on a table, yelled Allah Akbar, opened up his military-issued 9mm, and proceeded to shoot 45 people. Nice. Should we feel sad about that? I mean, I'm kind of shocked. I can't believe
To me, the biggest shock is that he's still receiving taxpayer money. I said, I don't have military experience, and I mean, I wish Mustang were here because he could comment on military procedures, especially in the case of crimes, better. But from what I would understand, it wouldn't make sense to me if one is awaiting trial for a crime that he's still receiving monies, or in a serious crime of all things, basically treason and mass murder, that he would still be receiving government monies, and especially in light of the evidence surrounding him. You know, I don't know if you saw a few days ago, I was following the national news, and of all places, Connecticut made news. There was a fellow, I believe he went on a workplace rampage. He killed, was 9 people, and he was caught. Not only was he caught in video before killing himself, but part of the interesting conflict with that was he was caught on video, according to the stories I've been reading, committing a crime, and he was going to be stealing beer, I think it was, beer cases, and he was caught in video doing that. Now, Nidal Malik Hassan, we have him on video committing. We have him on video, from what I understand, and many committing, not only committing these crimes, but preparing to commit these crimes. The evidence is very much against him, and it's very well known. It's very well known. Even the media has gotten some of this video. So if we look at it from that perspective, the first question we should ask is, why is he still receiving this money? I mean, if why is he still receiving this money, especially in light of this overwhelming evidence and the serious nature of the allegations of being leveled against him? These are very serious. These are very serious charges. And the second point is, as you said, given that case, why would a bank want to accept the checks? Because accepting the checks would, I think at least, it would be seen as though they're consenting to his actions, but that by accepting him, they somehow would be perceived in the public as consenting to his actions, willing to deal with him. And it's good that the banks have taken notice of this and that they're not willing to work. It's good because it shows that they're aware of the seriousness of the crime, more so it seems than perhaps even our own government is, at least from the outside appearance.
Yeah, he's received $54,000 so far of taxpayer money, you know, and he's outraged. His attorney is crying discrimination, but you know, there's no law that says that the banks are violating any law. They have the discretion to pick and choose their customers as they please. I mean,
it's true.
They're an individual or they're an individual entity. They don't have to take his money, and they shouldn't have to take his money.
Well, it's true. It's like a credit card application. You know, just because you say that it says you're pre-approved and it says that you could receive this, doesn't mean when you apply for it you're going to get it. You're simply applying. You still have to be approved. And if for whatever reason you're denied, whatever that is, you know, it's funny now because there are so many laws we have about discrimination and non-discrimination and hate crimes, etc. But really when it comes down to the basic issue, no matter what the situation is, a person can want to buy something, but it's only conditional if the other person is willing to sell it. And that other person, until the product is sold, that person can decline for whatever reason, spoken or unspoken. And that's it. And you may not have to like the reason. It may not be right. It could be right. But you can still decline.
You know, and the sad part of it is 12 of those family members that he shot and killed, that Nidal Hassan murdered, the Muslim terrorist murdered, 12 of those families, what do they get as a death benefit from the military? Is it $15,000 or $25,000? So where's the discrimination part? Yeah, as a matter of fact, he should be forfeiting that $6,000 a month, and it should go as restitution to the families. As little as it is, he should forfeit it at best.
You make a good point that he's, you know, these families have gotten a very small death benefit, but this fellow, whom was said the evidence is very strong against him, very strong, overwhelmingly strong, and overwhelmingly clear that he committed these crimes, yet we have given him more money than we have given to the families, compared per person.
Yep.
So.
And he's living in jail. So therefore, taxpayers are funding that as well.
Yeah, I mean, but even then, it's just amazing how there's this dichotomy of his treatment versus the treatment of the people who are really affected. Because, you know, he'll be affected. He's going to go to jail. He could go to jail. He may not go to jail. His fate is still undecided yet, because he has not gone to trial. In the meantime, these families, they've lost sons, daughters, husbands, wives, who knows what? It's relatives, friends. That those people are going to be in boxes in the ground. They're not going to come back. And nothing we say or do can bring them back. And so at least for the families, you know, I'm not speaking of vengeance here, but for the families, it's necessary that this trial gets underway and gets done instead of simply dragging this issue out, because it's not right to either... not right to the families, and it's also not right to even Nidal Malik Hassan, because though the evidence is against him, it's not right to drag people, even criminals, along the system. Just simply do what one has to do and move on.
Military tribunal.
Yeah.
Well, here's a little bit of the sketch here. Bank of America notified Hassan last month that it was closing his account, and no area bank so far has agreed to open an account for the Army psychiatrist. Military regulations require soldiers to be paid through direct deposit, making a bank account indispensable. Screw you, Nidal Hassan. May you rot in hell, Allah Akbar. Okay, speaking of rotting in hell, Al and I were talking about this yesterday, and it seems like, Al, there's been a snowball of this story, and I'm beginning to wonder if is it Radio Jihad, but a little bit of controversy surrounding Imam Faisal Rauf of the Ground Zero Mosque fame. It appears that Faisal Abdul Rauf is on a world trip sponsored by you and I taxpayers, the State Department. The United States State Department is sending Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf around to the Islamic countries as an ambassador. But let's see. The Cordoba Initiative in New York, who is wanting to build this 15-story mosque, has had $18,000 in the bank as of, what was it, April, I believe it was, April 1st. And so now Faisal Abdul Rauf is going to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Egypt, Malaysia, and he's going to be an ambassador for the United States. Boy, it's a great fundraising tool for this guy, isn't it? To raise $100 million for a mosque that he only has $18,000 in the bank?
It's incredible. But, yeah, it's caught wind. This story has caught fire on the talk radio shows all across the country. In fact, AP just did a story, and they said, quote, the imam behind controversial plans for a mosque near the site of the September 11th attacks is being sent by the State Department on a religious outreach trip to the Middle East. Officials said Tuesday in a move that drew criticism from conservative lawmakers. The department is sponsoring Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf's visit to Qatar, Bahrain, and the United UAE, where he will discuss Muslim life in America and promote religious tolerance, spokesman P.J. Crowley said. He said the imam had been on two similar trips and that plans for an upcoming tour predated the mosque controversy.
Well, if you notice something, Alan... Vito, could you go back and read the list of countries that he's going to again?
He's going to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, and he is currently, I believe, in Malaysia.
Okay. And you also said Egypt as well, correct?
Egypt, yes. He's supposed to
okay.
go to Egypt.
Well, let's take a look at these countries real quick. First, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, and Al-Imarat Al-Mutakhida Al-Arabiya, the United Arab Emirates. These four countries, these are essentially the backbone of OPEC. All of these countries have an extremely wealthy ruling class. They're ruled by very wealthy people who made their money on oil. And these are some of our closest oil allies. Malaysia has a country that has given, its government has given across the world money to different Islamic causes and the building of mosques or Islamic centers. And Egypt, likewise, has done the same. So if you noticed, the places that he's being sent to are nations that are either A, very wealthy, or B, that have been involved in giving monies very prolifically to Islamic causes. Notice the countries he's not visiting. He's not visiting countries like Morocco, Algeria, Libya, Oman, Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh. Why? Because these countries are broke. They don't have money. What you said exactly, Alan, it's a fundraising trip. You can tell by the countries he's going to. If you want money, are you going to go to Pakistan or are you going to go to Saudi Arabia? Pakistan does not have money. Saudi Arabia does have money. You're not going to go to Yemen. You're not going to go to Bangladesh. You're going to go to Qatar or Bahrain or the United Arab Emirates. It's common sense.
this is a quote from the state. His work on tolerance and religious diversity, Andrew, where have we heard that before, religious diversity, is well known, and he brings a moderate perspective to foreign audiences on what it's like to be a practicing Muslim in the United States. What a great statement, huh?
Once again, I would say define moderate. define that word. I mean, depending on how you define. I think it was Bill Clinton who, when he was caught in his affair, he said, it depends how you define the word is. Maybe it was
correct.
Clinton who said it was Clinton who said that. And that's precisely the case. Depends how you define the word.
Yeah, you know, and two leading Republican members of Congress, Representatives Ileana Ross Layton of Florida and Peter King of New York, called government sponsorship of Ralph's trip unacceptable in a joint statement. They said he had suggested in at least one interview that the United States was to blame for the 9/11 attacks and that taxpayer money should not be used to fund this tour. So we have Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, who says that the United States is to blame for 9/11, and now we have the State Department, headed by none other than Hillary Clinton, who gets her marching orders from Sheikh Obama. The State Department is funding Faisal Abdul Rauf's trip around the world. He needs $100 million, so now he's going to these wealthy countries. And, you know, I really thought that for 8 years, all I heard from the liberals, while they were whining about Dick Cheney, about his coming from Halliburton, oh, the ties to Halliburton, the conflicts of interest, this is a gross conflict of interest to have the imam who's around the controversial mosque that's 600 feet from ground zero, is now, the taxpayers are now funding a trip for this SOB to go around the world, prance around the world, because he's some bastion of peace. And he's going to tell people how it is to grow up in the United States. You know, how a Muslim is to outreach in the United States. Well, you know what? The Americans are falling for the ruse that we're hoodwinking them, because we're going to erect a 15-story mosque just 600 feet from ground zero. We're going to call it the Cordoba Initiative, but we're going to masquerade that name by calling it Park 51. And we're going to call it an Islamic cultural center. Oh, we're going to call it a cultural center for diversity now. You know, this is how he's going to approach all these wealthy people. We're going to hoodwink the American people. Speaking of hoodwinking, we got a caller on the line. Let's put on... put on Holger. Holger, welcome to Radio Jihad. How are you?
Hey, Holger here. Hey, I like your story on this. I was just going to say, you know, we're actually going to pay for this guy to go around to Muslim countries to actually talk about how he kicked America's ass.
Right.
Yeah, he won one for the Gipper.
He's putting one over on the American people.
Oh, yeah.
Muslims grow up in America, man.
Yeah, maybe he'll have a little manual with him that he can hand out on, you know, how to use the Constitution to take over America.
Well, that's put out by the Muslim Brotherhood, 1991.
Yeah.
They have the playbook.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a disgrace, is what
on our dime.
Fair. Yes.
You know, if you don't mind, I just had one thing I was just mentioning before I came on here. I've still been trying to figure out the angle on Bloomberg, and I always take notice of behavior that just seems you know seems out there, and you know I think Bloomberg could have you know walked the fence a little bit on this, not made too many statements or whatever, but I mean, for him to go that far in support of it, you know, it just didn't seem right to me. And so last night I actually was on another blog talk show, and we were talking about the Arizona border issue, and there's some people down in Arizona right now doing some reconnaissance and so forth, and the topic came up about the Mexican, you know, basically this is an insurgency down in Mexico that's, you know, literally trying to overthrow the Mexican government. And I just thought of the two parallels that of behavior that just absolutely seemed above the pale. And one was the behavior of the Mexican president when he came to D.C., if you remember, you know, how he scolded America for our our immigration policy and our border policy.
Yep.
You know, embarrassed, I mean, literally, you know, reams us out while congressmen stand and cheer for him and stands on the White House lawn and criticizes America. And I'm watching this and I'm going, is this guy nuts? You know, why this behavior? And then, you know, months later, I've got the mayor of New York City, a city that lost over 2,500 people to Islamists, fighting for them to have this mosque. And I'm like, what's in common between these two guys? And it came to me, as far as I'm concerned, it's absolute fear. The Mexican president came here, he's so fearful of the repercussions from the drug cartels in Mexico that he came here to basically bash the U.S. to buy himself more time in his home country. Bloomberg is taking this position because if he comes out against the mosque, he fears the reprisals in his own city again.
Well, 61% of the New Yorkers, though, there are against this mosque. But he's got he does have 100 million reasons as to why he supports it, though. I mean, he gets $100 million plus whatever else is generated as a result of that $100 million that's flowing through his city. Hopefully, the unions will, none of the union people will step up to want to build this this place of dominance. I mean, you know, they're going to have to get Muslim builders, which I'm sure they'll get plenty of contractors, Muslim contractors, to build this hoodwinked building.
Yeah.
But it's $100 million that's going in, that's going to flow into the city of New York. That's one of the things that I think he just sold out for the almighty dollar.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with that, and I think quite frankly, if you read between the lines on this whole statement, State Department backing of his trip and stuff, I'm starting to wonder if the State Department and the Obama administration wasn't involved in this thing from the get-go.
They've been extremely silent, haven't they?
Yeah, just a little bit. Has anybody heard the president utter anything about this issue? A single word?
No. He's been on vacation, sorry.
He's been too busy.
Yeah. Well, Holger, you bring up an interesting point, the fear factor, because Bloomberg, he's not afraid of the Judeo-Christian element that's against the mosque because they're not going to blow him up. But if he goes against the Islamists, there's a good chance that they will blow him up or cause some type of violent backlash, which is the fear factor. And I never looked at it as the fear on the Mexican president when he was here. I didn't even make that connection that he is afraid of the drug cartels, just like Bloomberg is afraid of the violent political Islamists. That's quite an observation. Well done.
Well, this past week, the Mexican president, the same piece of crap that was trouncing our country on our soil, came out and basically made the statement that the drug cartel are trying to take over, and he called it the state. I mean, it's the first time that he's admitted that this isn't just a crime problem. This isn't just some drug running problem. This is a group of Mexicans that are looking to overthrow his government. This guy is scared shitless. And quite frankly, I think there's a factor in this with Bloomberg. He doesn't want to be the mayor that pissed off the Islamists and brought another attack on that city, let alone his own ass.
That's a good point, because you had the Times Square bomber who came very close in detonating that bomb by the Viacom in Times Square, which could have really been devastating. You've had a couple other incidents that have occurred in New York over the last 2 years. We had the Fort Dix Six, so that's New Jersey. But you also had the issue up in West Point area. Remember that, Al?
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to firebomb the Jewish synagogues in the Bronx and in Brooklyn area, and they killed those two guys. Then you had the guy, the backpacker, that came in from Colorado, from Denver. So you're onto something there. It is a fear. It's a fear of Islam. And isn't that what the Quran says there, Andy? We will instill fear into the hearts of the disbelievers.
سألقي الرعب في قلوب الذين كفروا We will strike terror into the hearts of the infidels.
Well, and I was just going to add this is the if you're and Bloomberg is a pretty shrewd man. I mean, this guy's a multi-billionaire. I mean, this guy isn't some idiot. And so if you were doing it for the money, you'd be a little bit more coy about it. You'd be a little bit more polished with your with your comments and so forth. It's my belief that he wanted it absolutely publicized. He wanted the controversy of his statements so that there would be no doubt in every corner of the world that he was against, he was for this mosque and for the respect of Islam. You know, if he was getting stuff under the table, he would have been a lot more, middle of the roadish on this thing because he'd want to try and hide that fact.
Well, now that we have the element of the State Department in it, this has now become an international story. Before it was just a state or national story, but now it's international. So maybe Obama is actually working through the State Department and has been working with Ralph and the Cordoba Initiative all along.
Well, who sanctions these trips? Okay, you have the Secretary of State who authorizes these trips, who grants the visas, but you know that the policy that this is drawn upon, it comes right out of Sheikh Obama and his administration. He's the one that signs off on this. So obviously he must believe in Imam Faisal Rauf and the Muslim Brotherhood.
What's your take on this, Gotti? You've been awful quiet.
Oh, my God.
Didn't want to interrupt. I'm just surprised that nobody brought up, and I've been sitting here at the computer trying to find it, and, like you guys, I get bombarded with literally hundreds of emails a day, and I can't find the one that mentions it. But I have a picture of Imam Faisal Rauf with everybody from the State Department from like 2 years ago, including Mogahed. So this has been an ongoing thing. This is the reason Obama's been so quiet. And it's, to answer your question, Vito, wonder how long this has been going on or if he's been in on it since the beginning. This photograph from 2 years ago shows him standing with all the people that are now surrounding the president. That pretty much answers the question.
Yeah, it says in this one AP story, it says, neither Rauf nor the State Department seem eager to publicize his summer trip to Saudi Arabia and points nearby. Oh, so Bahrain, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar are all points nearby, though his tour appears imminent, as in he'll probably be touching down in the Middle East this coming week, and he's not due back till early September. Wow. My source of this information is the New York office of his Cordoba Initiative Foundation and his wife and co-director at the Cordoba Initiative, Daisy Khan.
Yeah, it's funny because if you read back to the beginning, and we talked about this last week on Radio Jihad, about how he had disappeared and he was making a trip through the Middle East, but nobody knew where he was. Do you recall that?
I sure do.
Okay, well, a couple of days later, NEFA, N-E-F-A, who I get daily updates from, they had tried to track him down. And in a phone call to the Cordoba Initiative, they kept getting no comment, no comment, no comment as to where he was. And then finally some staffer slipped and said that he was on a trip to the Middle East. And that's when they started to track it down, and then they backtracked and they said, to cover up their tracks, well, it's a State Department-sanctioned trip. And that's when they contacted the State Department and all this news came out. My point is, why would the State Department, paying on a trip that's our tax dollars, so much for transparency, why would they hide it? Why did everybody have to go and play investigative reporter to find this out? Because if somebody hadn't stumbled on this, we would have never known about it. And it was our tax dollars that sent them there.
Are you
saying? So what the hell are they hiding?
Are you saying that the Obama administration is not transparent? What are you?
Oh, I don't know. Just read my last article. That answers that question.
That's why I brought it up, Gotti.
it's amazing, and I don't want to get off with the topic, but I will just say that, it takes a lot to amaze me. It really does, as it does with any one of the guys on Radio Jihad. We hear things, we see things, we check up on it, and we know a lot of things that we don't even have time to try and explain or discuss on the radio. But I'll tell you what, the hundreds and hundreds of pages of material that I received over the past week to write last week's article with playing connect the dots blew my mind. I mean, it goes so much deeper, and it's like an onion. It's like you peel it back, and it just keeps going and going, and it's all connect the dots, and I triple-checked everything, and it goes far beyond Republican and Democrat. I mean, both sides are on this. It goes into Lieberman, and it blew my mind how many people, you know, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. You grease my palm and I'll grease yours. This whole thing with the Muslim initiative goes all the way back to the end of the Bush era, and it just is phenomenal how many Republicans are involved in it, just as many as there are Democrats. And it literally opened my eyes and blew my mind.
Well, why don't you take a few minutes and connect the dots for everybody?
Well,
I'll tell you what, Alan, that would be a two-hour-plus show, but I'll tell you what we can do is we'll get the guy who supplied me with all this information, who spent the last 4 years researching strictly Sharia-compliant finance. That's how he stumbled on all this. And his name is Gary Johnson, Jr., and he's the senior advisor for Victory Institute. And I can arrange, we will have him on, and this guy's a wealth of information. As a matter of fact, Andy spoke with him because he was on my radio show one evening that Andy was on. So this kid really is just like a walking encyclopedia of connect the dots and follow the money. I mean, we definitely have to have him on. We can arrange that for next week.
That sounds great.
Well, let's see.
So
what else?
That's my take on the whole thing. But there is one thing, Vito. When I was on hold, I gotta complain. I wouldn't be Gotti if I didn't have a complaint. You used the term moderate Muslim and asked Andy, and Andy said that depends on what the word is.
Yep.
We gotta stop using this term moderate Muslim. I had a gentleman on my radio program, America Akbar, on Thursday, by the name of Dr. Thomas Ahmed, who's a Sudanese Muslim who converted out of Islam when he went to India and started studying theology and started learning about Judaism and Christianity. And he said something, and I told him I was going to use this. I said, I'm going to use this line. I love this line. He said, a Muslim is a Muslim is a Muslim no matter where they live. And if they're a Muslim, they believe in everything. That includes jihad. This term, moderate Muslim, is nothing more than a Western term. I added the word politically correct. And he agreed. It's a politically correct Western term, and we got to stop using it because we're just enabling them. When we say that, we might as well be saying, well, it's a peaceful religion and you've got some radicals. No. A Muslim is a Muslim is a Muslim, period.
That's exactly what Noni Darwish says. She says the exact same thing, that moderate Muslim is a Western term created in the West. It has no meaning or any significance outside within the Middle East. Islam is Islam. Sharia law is Sharia law, and that is all there. That's all that you need to know.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think we at Radio Jihad need to make a point. From now on, anybody uses that term, moderate or radical, in the same sentence as the word Islam or Muslim, they need to put a dollar in the pot. Because we got to stop using that term.
Well, you know, we were mocking somebody when we used the word moderate, so believe me.
Be careful. Don't finish that sentence, Vito. You lost a buck. No more M or R words. Avon calling.
That's as bad as the word radical. You're exactly right. That's something that really,
exactly.
really is troubling.
Well, it's because stream, you know, all joking aside, and Alan's right, if we continue to use it, we're just as bad as everybody else, and we're making it easier for them to continue to say, oh, but we're not the radicals, we're the peace ones, you know, we're that peace-loving group. We want to hold hands, and we're building this mosque down here at Ground Zero, not as a victory, it's not domination, it's because we feel your pain, and we want to show you how much love we have. Yeah, whatever. And I got a bridge for sale in Brooklyn, too, buddy.
Well, you know, that's as bad as the statement that I heard yesterday on Fox and Friends. Gretchen Carlson was talking to this attorney named Lisa, and she was actually making a very good point about the judge in New Jersey who sided with Sharia law, and then the appellate court overturned that. You know, the man raped his wife, and the judge said that he did not rape his wife, and because of Islamic law. And she ended it. She was doing a great job, but she absolutely blew it at the end when she said, well, there are some elements of Islam that are trying to radicalize portions of Sharia law. I almost fell out of my chair. It's like this is the the mentality of these interviewers who are on TV. You're going to radicalize a portion of Sharia law. There is no radicalization of Sharia law. It's Sharia law. That's it.
Right. It goes back to their saying, oh, well, part of our religion was hijacked. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. The only thing that was hijacked were planes on 9/11, pal. Your religion was never hijacked. You were good Muslims doing what they're supposed to. You know, and Fox News, I'll tell you, they're just as bad as everybody else. How much of it, what percentage of them is owned by a Saudi now? I mean, you could see the change the day that contract was signed. They're using those terms and political correct terms just as much as everybody else. I heard them use the word insurgent today instead of terrorist. It's getting ridiculous.
I have to agree with you on that part. I'll tell you, it's just amazing the softening of the vernacular in order to temper the American people's attitudes and to make nice. You know, we're in that politically correct multicultural attitude. And then you have this issue of Imam Faisal Raouf, who is being funded by the State Department to do a religious outreach in the Middle East. And where does he go? Saudi Arabia, cash-rich Dubai, cash-rich Abu Dhabi, cash-rich Bahrain, and cash-rich Qatar. And Qatar, let's not forget, and Mustang brought this up a year ago, Qatar was the country that funded Robert Gates while he was chancellor of Texas A&M University, and they now have a branch of Texas A&M University in Qatar. They gave him $600 million in order to do so. What an endowment, huh?
Yeah, so look, if you go back to the 09 records of the Cordoba Initiative, and Qatar was the largest donor then also.
Yeah, so, you know, why is this guy going around the country on our dime, on our taxpayer money? Who authorized that? You got to go look at the Secretary of State, most certainly, and then it goes back to the President of the United States. Sheikh Obama is the one that had to authorize this. He had to give the directive to Hillary Clinton, and the chimpanzee went ahead, and she authorized this guy to go around the country. Now we have a conflict of interest. He wants to bring a mosque on Ground Zero. He's going to be going around the world. He's going to be soliciting funds, which he cannot do as a State Department sponsored trip. But you know damn well that there's not $100 million in the United States, so he's got to go outsource that money. And, of course, their books are closed. They have not disclosed, other than when he had a report with the Cordoba Initiative, in April he had $18,000 in the bank.
Yeah,
so something
speaking of money,
here. This
I don't know if you guys – before I came on, Vito, I don't know if you guys mentioned it or not, but did you mention about what the governor of New York said today?
What did Major Bumblingberg say today?
No, not the mayor of New York, the governor.
Oh, the governor. Oh,
Patterson.
I'm sorry. That's the blind
Patterson, leader. Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah, he said that if they were willing to move the mosque to a different location, they would figure out a way to foot all of or part of the bill for building it.
New York doesn't have the money to do that, for crying out loud. They're in financial
straits. The point is that means that the governor doesn't want it there either, but didn't have the gojones to come out and say it. Instead, he's offering, if you move it to a different part of the city, we'll help pay for it.
You've got 100 mosques in a 3-mile radius, for crying out loud? What more do you want?
Yeah,
and
counting.
Go ahead.
Counting. No, I was just going to say, counting the different boroughs, and I think it's Queens and one other, and I did see the numbers the other day, because you had mentioned that last week, and I looked it up. There's well over 100 mosques in the three boroughs, Manhattan, Queens, and one other. So, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous how many there are.
And you have, in Brooklyn, you've got the most radical of the individuals. You have Siraj Wahaj, who goes around the country, goes to fundraisers for the Council on American Islamic Relations. He talks about the demise of America, the miserable house crumbled from within. He's anti-American. He's anti-West. He's anti-capitalist. He's in Brooklyn, New York. You have the problem with the mosque in Sheepshead Bay. Then you have another problem with a mosque in another portion of Brooklyn that they want to have the call to prayer five times a day. But you know what the answer was? Well, we'll only do it three times a day, so people want to get up at 5:30 in the morning. You have people who have lived in those communities for over 30 years who grew up there. You have a city noise ordinance. This is the problem. You give Islam an inch, they take 12 yards. And this is what's going to happen in downtown. Can you believe in Manhattan? We're going to get a 15-story mosque on September 11, 2011. I bet you by 2015, because we have to be sensitive to Islam, they're going to start having to call to prayer. And that is another sign of victory for Islam. It's a domination by building that 15-story mosque. It's a domination that the Cordoba Initiative, it's a domination that they have taken over the city, and they will deem that portion their holy site. And they stab Americans right in the back again.
Now, I've got a question for Andy, if I could, before you guys break for the evening. Because
yep.
I honestly didn't know the answer to this question, Andy. And all kidding aside, I had a gentleman call in my show last week and said, what would happen if we had a farmer from upstate New York bring some pigs down and we ran them through that building?
Ooh, that would be very interesting. Are you talking about legal repercussions or Islamic perspective on spiritual repercussions?
Well, this person claimed that there was a mosque that was supposed to be built in, I think he said either Minneapolis or Minnesota, I don't remember which, and the neighborhood got so outraged. What they did was they brought some pigs in and ran the pigs across the property, and they moved. They decided they wouldn't build there because it had been tainted with pigs.
Yes, that's very accurate, because remember, in Islam, pigs are evil. Pigs are one of the things that Allah is going to wipe out on the last day. So what one of the interesting things about pigs is, a lot of times, Christians in Muslim countries will actually surround themselves with, like, you know, pig farms to protect themselves for that exact reason, because Muslims will not go near them because they're very, very unclean in Islam. And to even touch one, you have to go through much ritual purification, and it can even be sinful. In very Orthodox sense of Islam, it can be even sinful just to touch a pig. So if you were to run a bunch of pigs across the property or
what would they do in that case, just hypothetically?
If this were to happen, that would cause trauma. I mean, literally, the area could not be used.
So a true Muslim, which obviously we know Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf is, if someone were to do that, and I'm certainly not advocating it, but something as simple as bringing a pig in under their arm and releasing it in that building, they wouldn't be able to build there.
Not be able to build there, and it would maybe one pig they might make the exception. But if you were to bring a lot, it would definitely cause them to reconsider, if not move, because it would be painful.
Hey, here's a thought. September 5th, Shalom International is having a rally at 45 Park Place just down the street. So what we should do is encourage everybody, all, you know, 5,000-10,000 people, bring a pig with them and just let them loose.
I'm telling you. There's got to be some New Yorkers in the outlying boroughs that have pigs that are against this mosque. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not advocating anything, and I'm certainly not advocating violence. I wouldn't want to upset these people, but it's just a thought. Hint.
You know those little pot-bellied pigs that people have for pets? They aren't that big, you know.
Yeah.
They get big, though. You got to get them when they're little, what do they call them, piglets. You got to get them when they're little. I've seen some big, you're talking about the Vietnamese pot belly. They get pretty big.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just thinking, you know, it's probably not the size of the pig, you know, that matters to the Islamists, you know, so if you could fit like 20 of those babies in a pretty good sized crate.
Well, I actually read a report, Vito, just yesterday that the Muslims in the United States were up in arms about the new Geico commercial because of the pig.
What pig? Is it a pig on the Geico commercial?
There's a new Geico commercial that asks about the pig saying, wee, 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 all the way home, and it shows a pig.
and they're
outraged about that.
Welcome to America. Thank you for assimilating.
You mean, Gotti, there's some groups that are so outraged that a pig is used in a commercial that they have enough time and energy on their hands to make formal complaints about a commercial?
I don't know. They had enough time on their hands to complain about a cartoon where Muhammad was in a bear outfit.
That's true.
I mean,
they
Al,
never did
on.
Show him.
You have an issue where, you know, you can't upset these guys. You know, every little thing that happens, you know, they have to file some sort of a complaint. I mean, let's face it, they're the victims in America, aren't they?
I don't know. I'm just thinking. They make Andy. How old does a woman have to be before she puts on a burqa?
Depends. It depends on the country. Usually, once a woman starts to begin to be, it depends how orthodox you are. Usually, it's from the most orthodox perspective. It's once you start to get a sense of, you know, realize a sense of what the world is. So once you start to develop basic comprehension, then you need to start wearing hijab or burqa.
Okay, so there are girls, young
post-menses.
There are young girls out there, small petite women, their burqas. So we shouldn't have any problem getting a hold of, I don't know, maybe 100 burqas and little ones and putting them over pigs and taking them to the mosque. And then when they get inside, we whip the burqas off and we say, "America Akbar," and we run away. Just a thought.
Well, all this is said in jest, but in Saudi Arabia, we couldn't even, one, non-Muslims can't even set foot into Mecca or Medina because it is against the law and it's punishable by jail time. Now, what we're saying, yeah, we're joking around and yucking it up a little bit, but bringing it back to reality, if any one of us were to step foot into Mecca or Medina, we would be arrested, possibly even killed, because we are viewed as unclean. We can't even step foot onto their soil. So, yeah, these jokes might be seen as insensitive to some people, but the reality of the situation in Saudi Arabia is 100 times more egregious and insensitive and downright bigoted towards non-Muslims. And that should outrage everyone who is listening to this show. It should outrage the people who are outraged over our little humor session that we just had. And if you're not outraged by the reality of it, then there is something very, very wrong with your worldview.
Well, Alan, you and I, according to the Quran, we're pigs and monkeys anyway, so.
Well, yeah, you got a point. We are Jews, and we are labeled as pigs and monkeys in the Quran.
Exactly.
So
maybe all we have to do is you and I sneak inside.
I'm just watching this commercial. It's funny.
It's a great ad. It's a great commercial, but evidently they don't like it.
I guess they won't be buying insurance from Geico.
Who was it? Was it Care that was complaining?
I don't remember. I just saw a small blip on an article, and it might have been on Creeping Sharia or one of those websites, and it said that there was outcry from the Muslim community. But Vito, you ought to post that YouTube of the commercial on Radio Jihad.
This is funny.
He's loving
it. You gotta see this thing. Oh God, I've just got tears in my eyes. He's holding those little windmills that you blow.
For those who haven't seen the commercial, go to YouTube and pull it up because it is a humorous commercial.
You know, what you do is get about 500 pigs and put Geico on the sides of them and then run them through, you know, Park West down in New York.
Yeah, I would guess that there's no chance of Geico becoming a Sharia-compliant insurance company.
No, after this commercial, I don't think so. Wow.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Well, okay, back to Imam Faisal Abdulruf. There's something amazingly wrong with this whole thing. Nobody, maybe now that this is getting some feet to this press and they got some legs on it, maybe someone will start investigating why the State Department would do such a thing. And then what about the conflict of interest? that Imam Maruf has, along with making this trip to the Middle East, namely Bahrain, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. There's got to be something that is a conflict of interest on this, as well as he's building a wanting to build a 15-story mosque, raise $100 to $110 million, and has no money.
I'll tell you what, Vito, if there's anybody out there who's listening to Radio Jihad right now who even is or knows or has a friend or a family member who is a tax attorney, specifically a tax attorney, we would love to talk to them. Alan and I were talking about the fact that they have religious 501c3 status and the fact that they have to, by law, those books should be open on a quarterly basis. They have to file their tax returns as a 501c3. And now I just thought of something with what you just said. Since when does our State Department shuttle around the chairperson of a 501c3?
Exactly.
Something's got to be wrong here.
So in other words, if the State Department is funding his trip, and he meets with someone in Qatar, and nails a $20 million business deal, now isn't there 450,000 nonprofits in America that are going to be screaming about that scenario?
Exactly.
Well,
should the State Department be for funding his trip if he's a nonprofit organization?
Yeah.
It violates the Foreign Trade Act, right, Al? What is that? Isn't there a violation of the 501c3 by accepting foreign money? That's especially if it goes unreported. You lose your 501c3 status. As a matter of fact,
you should. You have to account for every dollar and where every dollar is spent.
That's
to maintain your nonprofit status.
Right.
How about every dollar raised? Do they have to account for every dollar raised?
Absolutely, especially if it's foreign money.
You've got to jump through hoops if it's foreign money. And this is where I was telling Al, because I went online and looked up the IRS codes. You can accept foreign money for a 501c3, but it's a lot more strict and a lot more stringent, and there's really a bunch of hoops you got to jump through in order to get that. And we all know this guy is certainly not open with his books. He's yet to answer the question where the money came from to buy the property. How is that a 501c3 according to our IRS federal law codes if he's not going to tell us where the money came from?
Well, maybe the countries he's visiting are going to write checks, but the check will actually be made out to the State Department, and then the State Department will transfer the money. Since it's not a mosque, it's an Islamic center, it will be like a grant.
Ooh, like a bailout.
Yeah. And above board, of course, he's not, he didn't get the money from a foreign interest, he got it from the State Department.
No, don't give our State Department, who is undoubtedly listening, any more ideas. Please don't go down that road. That's all I need is a frickin' Islamic bailout.
Well, here's a little bit more about Imam Raouf. This is by Pajama Media. On May 25, 2010, Abdul Raouf wrote an article for the New York Daily News insisting, "My colleagues and I are the anti-terrorists. We are the people who want to embolden the vast majority of Muslims who hate terrorism to stand up to the radical rhetoric. Our purpose is to interweave the American Muslim population into the mainstream society." So the Pajama Media goes on and says, "Oh, really? Only 2 months before, on March 24, 2010, Abdul Raouf is quoted in an article in Arabic for the website Rights for All, entitled 'The Most Prominent Imam in New York.' Raouf says, 'I do not believe in religious dialogue.'" Yes, you read that correctly. The phrase is inaccurate. "Religious dialogue, as customarily understood, is a set of events with discussion in large hotels that result in nothing. Religions do not dialogue, and dialogue is not present in the attitudes of the followers, regardless of being a Muslim or a Christian. The image of Muslims in the West is complex, which needs to be remedied." So, and for Rights for All is not an obscure blog, but the website of the media department at Cairo University, the leading educational institution of the Arabic-speaking world. a little contradiction by Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf. We have the two faces of Eve, or the two faces of Imam Rauf.
We have the face when he's speaking to English audiences, and then we have the real Imam Rauf when he speaks to the Arabic office, Arabic listeners, and he says the exact opposite, which is anti-American, anti-constitution, and frankly treasonous.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. There's another situation where a fatwa is simultaneously being issued forbidding a Muslim to sell land to a Christian because the Christians wanted to build a church on it. Really. And the people that owned the 51 Park West, they were Christians who sold to Muslims, but that's okay. All right, so we missed something on this, guys. What did we miss? Are we jumping to conclusions on this? Imam Faisal Rauf says one thing in Arabic, and then like, there's no dialogue in religion, and then he says in another breath, in English, that they are most anti-terrorism. It sounds like he's really appeasing the American audiences, camouflaging what his real intent is.
Sounds like he's a lying SOB, if you ask me. He's playing us for fools. He's playing a double game. And that should concern everybody.
They don't exactly put suicide belts on the outside of their clothes.
Well, not all terrorists wear suicide belts. You use bombs, guns, and bullets. We're in the middle of an information war right now, and there is the stealth jihad, and Imam Rauf is shown himself to be one of the leaders in this stealth jihad because his tentacles run deep, his influence runs deep within the State Department. In fact, this guy is getting paid by the State Department to go to these Islamic countries to raise money for the Cordoba Initiative.
And you know, this is no longer a stealth issue, Al, because I'm reading, here's another portion of this interview that Imam Faisal Rauf had an interview with Andy, you're going to tell me this. Hadiul Islam, H-A-D-I-Y-U-L.
Hadiul Islam, yeah.
Hadiul Islam by Sauda Abdul Maksud. Abdul was asked his views on Sharia, Islamic religious law, and the Islamic State. This is what Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf had to say. Throughout my discussions with the contemporary Muslim theologians, it's a clear an Islamic state can be established in more than just a single form or mold. It can be established through a kingdom or a democracy. The important issue is to establish the general fundamentals of Sharia that are required to govern. It's known that there are sets of standards that are accepted by Muslim scholars to organize the relationship between government and the governed. So, the important issue is to establish the general fundamentals of Sharia that are required to govern. This man is dangerous. This man has got an ulterior motive. The State Department is wining and dining this SOB with taxpayer money, and he's going around the world, and he wants the implementation of Sharia law inside the Western democracies, namely the United States of America. He has a hidden agenda, and it's no more stealth jihad, Al. It's wide open. And,
and
the media in this country should absolutely jump on this if they had any cojones to do that.
Well, they should, because what he's calling for is a dual court system here in the United States. He's calling for the subversion of our Constitution and tearing at the fabric of our country. This guy is a traitor of the First Order, using his own words.
Current governments are unjust and do not follow Islamic laws. That is from Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf. Current governments are unjust and do not follow Islamic laws. No shit, Sherlock. We follow the United States Constitution. And the United States Constitution is the governing law that was set up 233 years ago by brilliant individuals, brilliant men, who understood what it was like for a monarchy to run and rule over their people.
Right.
Now, if you want to go ahead and you want a Sharia court, go back to Saudi Arabia. Stay in Egypt. My God, we welcome you to stay in Egypt. Imam Faisal Abdul-Rauf.
He doesn't want to stay. He wants to do it here. Now, according to the Muslim Brotherhood strategic memo entered into evidence at the Holy Land Foundation terrorist financing trial in September of 2007, it says, quote, "The Muslim Brotherhood must understand that all their work in America is a kind of a grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging their miserable house by their own hands." And by their own hands means that we are allowing them to do it to us with legally. And that is what our State Department is doing. Imam Rauf is an agent, I believe, of the Muslim Brotherhood. And he is following the strategic memo to the letter. Hillary Clinton is allowing him to destroy America by our own hands. And this has got to stop. Outrage has got to be fermented within the population of this country. Everyone needs to call the State Department and complain and put a stop to this immediately.
See, you know what? If you look in the chat room, Lerner's been putting some quotes in there from a State Department spokesperson, saying that this has been that them sending these Muslims out around the world, you know, the State Department sending Muslims out around the world has been going on for, quote, "We've done this many, many times with many leading figures over the past few years."
Does it make it right?
No, I'm just saying is I'd like to see proof of that, quite frankly. They're saying that this is nothing out of the ordinary, that this has been done many, many times. I'd like to know when.
Well, I don't doubt that it's been going on for a while because we've been accommodating them because we are a compassionate country. We are a compassionate people. We just want to get along with people. But an enemy is an enemy.
Who's the Assistant Secretary of Defense's aide, right-hand man by the name of Hesham Islam? Why do you think all these pro-Islamic messages and edicts and memos come out of the White House? He's the one that got Steve Coughlin. Was it Steve Coughlin? Got him fired from his job. Who wrote the or Emerson? Who wrote the infamous terrorist doctrine that the Joint Chiefs of Staff were going to follow? But Hesham Islam nixed it, and the guy got fired from being an independent contractor and a what was it?
Right. That was Steve Coughlin.
Steve Coughlin, yeah. Thank
Coughlin,
you.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a patriot, and he got fired by Hesham Islam because he was telling our Defense Department exactly what we talk about here, and he got fired for it. And you know, there's something inherently wrong with this. Inherently.
Well, we need to do on our website is we need to get a picture of Imam Faisal Abdul-Rauf, and under it we need to have a banner and put his quote down: "Current governments are unjust and do not follow Islamic laws." That, my friends, sums up a lot. That tells you where the man's ideals are, where the man's value system is. He can say all he wants. He's anti-terrorism. he's pro-America. But current governments are unjust and do not follow Islamic laws. That, my friends, means the implementation of Sharia law in America. That's exactly what he wants. That's his goal. And we are funding this man to go around the world so he can raise money to build a 15-story mosque. And that's what it is. It's a mosque. It's not a cultural center. It's not an Islamic learning center. It's not an Islamic whatever the hell they want to call it. It's a mosque. It's a sign of dominance. And Imam Faisal Rauf is trying to pull the wool over America's eyes.
That's right. Radio Jihad was one of the first media outlets to break this story. In fact, we broke it on yesterday's show. The rest of the world is now catching up, and the story is catching fire with very, very good reason.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this guy's goal is the imposition of Sharia law in every country, and he's here in the United States, and we are accommodating him. Our State Department, led by Hillary Clinton, who's told by Sheikh Obama, our State Department is enabling this man around the world using taxpayer money, and it's an absolute disgrace. The guy wants the imposition of Sharia law in the Western democracies. He said it. He didn't say it back 20 years ago when he was just a kid and he didn't understand. We're talking about March 25th, 2010. That's a disgrace, man. That is something that should open everybody's eyes. There's an ulterior motive about this mosque that's being built at 51 Park Place. Go ahead.
The State Department spokesman is referring to him as distinguished. He's a distinguished Muslim cleric.
Distinguished?
Yeah. You know, a distinguished cleric that wants a mosque at ground zero.
Click, click, boom. That's
the Well, the head of our State Department, Hillary Clinton, after the doctors in Afghanistan were executed, she got on, she was quoted as reading Quran 532. She was slamming the Taliban and saying that anyone who kills a human being, it shall be as though he has killed all of mankind. If anyone saves a life, it shall be as though he has saved the lives of all mankind. That's Quran verse 532. But what she didn't read was verse 533, which says, is very short, quote, "The only reward of those who make war upon Allah and his messenger and strive after corruption in the land will be that they will be killed or crucified or have their hands and feet on alternate sides cut off or will be executed out of the land." Is that willful ignorance, Andy?
And there, and as the rest of the verse ends, and that is their disgrace in this life, and a terrible punishment in the hereafter awaits them.
Oh, you mean Hillary omitted that portion of it?
Oh yeah, she just said the verse that the Muslims plagiarized from the Mishnah Sanhedrin, that they stole that verse from the Jews of all. This was written 400 years before Muhammad even took his first breath.
I guess she must have got that verse from her Palestinian girlfriend. She's now married to the New York guy, the New York congressman. No conflict of interest.
Yeah, but you're talking about by our own hand. Our state, the head of the State Department, Hillary Clinton, is a shill for political Islam. In fact, that verse was abrogated by 533.
Perhaps it's more viewed in the context of 533, because remember, as I've said, the position of Islam theologically is that one's human dignity is defined by his being a Muslim. So if you will kill another human being, you're a Muslim, well, that means you have killed another Muslim, and that is, in that case, the statement is true. However, if you are not a Muslim, you do not possess the humanity of a Muslim, and therefore you are not regarded as such. So of course it makes sense. It's like I said earlier. Depends on how you define is. In this case, it depends on how you define what it means to be a human being.
I'm sure that Huma Abedin is the one that gave her that verse to desensitize Americans and then to show Hillary in a positive light that she knows the Quran and she's quoting, see, the Quran means peace. And she just omitted one verse too soon. And, of course, she did not complete the rest of the verse. So... oh, even the State Department's bought off. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. So where do we go here?
I don't know. We're speaking the truth, Vito. I challenge all of our listeners to do their own research. If you can prove us wrong, do it. Radio Jihad will send a $50 check to any listener who can prove anything that we've said tonight is incorrect is regarding political Islam. I guarantee you no one will be able to take us up on that offer. And we'll give you a free book by Brigitte Gabriel.
And a copy of the movie Obsession.
We'll make exactly.
I'll tell you, I'm really troubled, though, by Imam Faisal Raouf. I'm really troubled by the statement, current governments are unjust and do not follow Islamic laws. And then he added, new laws are permitted after the death of Muhammad. It goes back to Andy's point, and Andy, you're going to comment on this. New laws are permitted after the death of Muhammad, so long, of course, that these laws do not contradict the Quran or the deeds of Muhammad, so they create institutions that assure no conflicts with Sharia.
Precisely. It's essentially just the application of theology to modern times. In other words, as long as you don't change the essential reason why it happens, then of course you can add new things. You can add new, as long as it complements what already exists.
Yeah, but they in effect have changed it. There have been verses that have been abrogated. So, I mean, that statement is incorrect in itself.
Well, not if you're a believing Muslim, because even if they have been abrogated, إِنَّ اللَّهُ يَفْعَلُ مَا يَشَاءُ, Allah doeth as He willeth. So who are you to judge Allah?
that's true. I mean, it was a 53-year-old man who married a 16-year-old girl.
Exactly.
Well, we're about out of time here, and I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. Gentlemen, Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next week. Alan Kay, no pork-eating, America lover, America
Akbar. Good night, sir.
Israel Akbar, Shalom Gotti.
And America Akbar to you too, Vito.
There he is. He's still there. And Holger,
I'd like to thank Holger for sitting in.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was an honor to join you here.
Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, please join us again next week, Monday and Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio. Go to our website, www.radiojihad.org. God bless our troops and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America.
Whose bright stars are 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong.
There we go.
Good show, guys.
So right at the end, I find the picture in the article I was looking for. I just found it. It's actually, I've got it on the U.S. State Department website, a picture of Imam Abdul Rauf, his wife, Daisy Khan, the executive director for the American Society for Muslim Advancement, Saeed Mirza, project manager of Reframing Perceptions of Islam and Muslims from the East-West Center, and Omar Amat, an entrepreneur, sitting at a roundtable discussion working for, according to this article, the State Department.
I'm sorry, did he say Omar Amat?
Yes.
An entrepreneur?
No, not Omar Amat. No. Not Omar Amat.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right.
Everybody right, else and their grandmother, except for Omar Amat.
I mean, the reality of this story is so unbelievably huge.
I like joining you guys. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, take care.
Thanks, bye.
Take care, Andy.
Do you think there's going to be any follow-through with this, or is it just going to have a week's worth of news time and then it's just going to disappear? Is there going to be any legal ramifications? Is anybody going to do the perp walk?
I want to know, guys, according to the State Department here, he's working for the State Department, going back as far as January of 2009, this was January 20th, 2009, how in the hell is this guy? Wait a minute, January 20th. When was Obama put into office?
January 20th, 2009. Gotti. What?
God. Sitting at a roundtable event at a forum called the Muslim Leaders of Tomorrow Forum, with a State Department sign right behind his frickin' head. How is this guy the chairman of a nonprofit organization?
Wait, are you saying that the minute that President Obama was inaugurated, one of his first acts was bringing in this Imam Rauf onto this Muslim commission?
Well, I'm going to have to double-check these dates, but you guys can find it yourselves. It's at creepingsharia.com, and there's a little picture with a link. It says, apparently, Rauf and his wife worked for the U.S. government according to this January 2009 State Department press release, and if you click on it, it takes you right to the State Department website. Yeah, this is kind of bizarre because it's dated January 20th, 2009.
Wow. Boy, Al, it's amazing what you find when you start digging a little bit, huh? And God didn't have to dig very far.
Well, you connected the dot, and that is a huge
dot.
Well,
it was Creeping Sharia that connected the dots.
Okay, so they put the President Obama dot connection.
Well, no,
wow.
I just did quick because I was reading the date. I was like, wait a minute. Well, that was the day he was inaugurated.
That's the dot. That is the dot that you just connected. Or
this
Vito
is
connected.
Very interesting.
Amazing, isn't it? This guy's the most transparent president that we've ever had. This guy is the worst president that we've ever had. He's the most unpatriotic president that we've ever had. He is the most anti-capitalistic president that we've ever had. And it's truly sad. And now you're looking at all these dots that you're connecting, and you're going, what the hell's going on? Can one man like this absolutely run roughshod over the entire United States of America? Is that how ignorant, is that how dumb Americans are? Is that what they believe, Americans are dumb?
Well, I'll tell you what, Vito, let me answer that. I got to read this one sentence to you from this article. Two sentences, I beg your pardon. For any ambitious readers out there, connect the dots between all of Rauf and Khan's organizations, including the Cordoba Initiative, and see if the money trail leads to Saudi Arabia. The mayor, the FBI, at least one family of a 9/11 victim, Jewish organizations, and a 9/11 memorial group are all in denial that this is the ideology that knocked down the Twin Towers. Osama bin Laden could never have imagined how successful 9/11 would be.
Absolutely. That's a very good statement. It's a very sad statement for America, but it's a very, very true statement.
Because they don't believe it's the same ideology. Because
right.
of that stupid, we're a peaceful religion, they've hijacked our religion, it's just a couple of radicals. It's that same shit all the time. I curse Bush every frickin' night for ever coming out with that stupid statement 2 days after 9/11, getting the Quran and standing arm in arm in the press room saying it's a peaceful religion, because it was because of that all this started.
They saw an opportunity and they ran with it.
Exactly. You know, and I've said it before, I understand that Bush was trying to quell a lot of unnecessary deaths in this country because people were taking it out on every Tom, Dick, and Harry that they saw wearing a rag on their head. But he went too far when he called it a peaceful religion. He really did.
Well, who did he have surrounding him? He had key imams and sheikhs with that imam. What's the guy? Isn't that the guy? Muzamil Siddiqui was one of the prominent ones that was standing by his side. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
he had like four or five of them on the stage with him. There was a member of CARE there. There was it was a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I'd have to go back and actually find the photograph, but yeah.
We're actually helping. We're enabling them. We're doing the work that they need that they needed to do, and we're just fast tracking it. And of course now we've elected the chief Muslim in the White House, Sheikh Obama, and he's just enabling and continues to give and. And there's really nothing much that Americans can do at this point other than election time and in November is throw all these bums out and elect these down-home conservatives who are going to, start putting the clamp down to this spending and be a little bit more watchful and open, because there's absolutely no transparency coming out of this Obama administration. I mean, he's lied about that. He's lied about everything else pretty much. It's just...
Did you read my last article, Vito?
Which one was that?
Al, what was the name of my last article? Inside the Administration's Web of Deceit.
No, I did not read the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh. What am I going to do with you guys?
By our own hands. By our own
Vito,
hands.
Vito, you've got to read it. You've got to read it just to see... that where I put Radio Jihad in the article with a link, and this article has gone viral on several sites. You've got to read it.
I will. I'll make it a point. I will read it.
It connects all the dots of Samar Ali. You know who she is, the White House fellow they just appointed?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
She's the one that's big on Sharia financing.
She's an expert on Sharia compliant finance.
Yeah, my question is this, Gotti. Here's a woman that has oversaw $400 million in Sharia banking finance in the bank that she worked with. Why would she take such a low-level job at the White House if she's that brilliant and she's done $400 million in transactions? Why does she then go to the White House? What is the plan now? What's going on? What is
I answer that question in my article. In my article, I wrote, you can bet your Sharia-compliant bottom dollar that we'll be seeing more of her in the future, because this is nothing more than taking these people for these White House fellowships to put them into White House positions so that they meet all the right people and they move up the ladder. This girl is 25 years old and has already been a legal analyst for the law firm she was working for with a bank out of Abu Dhabi and the Amman Islamic Bank. So, you know, but it goes further and deeper than that when you play connected dots, because her father is the chairman of the board of the Jerusalem Fund.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, and all that's in my article. And I have to admit, Gary Johnson, the kid I'd like to have on next week with you guys, he found all this shit. He connected all the dots on this and just sent me all the paperwork.
Well, let's have him on Tuesday when you're on.
Let me check next week's schedule. I don't have next week's schedule. Shit. yeah, that shouldn't be an issue. I can have him on next Tuesday.
Right,
him and Andy get into it, though, into the philosophy of Sharia compliance, and you got to keep them on track or they'll go so deep that nobody will comprehend what they're talking about. They did that on my show. You got to keep them on pace.
Well, you want to set that up?
Yeah, I can definitely set that up for you.
Okay, let's do it. What do you say, Vito?
I say that's great, because I'll tell you, between this Imam Fazl Abdul-Rauf, the State Department funding this son of a bitch with taxpayer money, and now you have these other these interns that are coming into the White House and these other Muslims, this Ali that comes in with this supposedly Sharia banking expert. You know, I want to know why now did he bring five more in? And you're talking about what, there was 39 Muslims in the White House as interns, and now they brought five more in. They bring this broad in, Ali, who's got the Sharia banking expertise. Why do you need somebody with Sharia banking expertise in the White House? Why?
For the same reason that Obama said that the most beautiful sound in the world that he's ever heard.
Yeah. And he also said during the campaign, America's the greatest country in the world. Help me change it. And now we know what that means.
Yeah,
now
he also
said
there were 57 states. Oops, I meant 50.
Yeah,
it's pretty scary. It really is. But I like what you were talking about a minute ago, and I think that the next week's article is going to be called Enabling Stealth Jihad and Creeping Sharia. And I'm going to finally put the hammer down and tell people to stop using the terms radical and moderate. And I'm going to explain that Muslim is a Muslim is a Muslim. And if you're a Muslim, you believe in Sharia. And if you believe in Sharia, you believe in jihad. End of story. I'm going to put it on paper and see whether or not Family Security Matters will have the balls to print it.
I agree with you on that, Gotti, because and Al, you know, I think you and I have talked about this. Why are all these, quote, these labeled moderate Muslims, they've been silent through this whole thing. They have the ability to stand up and say, we don't want terrorism, we want to assimilate into an American society. But why is the Islamic Society of Central Florida have 30,000 people at its mosque? Why? Why? They follow Islam. They follow the fundamental orthodox teachings of Islam. And that's what the whole thing is. It's all a big ruse, the term radical, the term moderate. It's all a ruse to really weaken the American people's will and to soften the blow that's coming about. And Fazl Abdul-Rauf is one of the chief hoodwinkers in the United States, and the enablers are Hillary Clinton and Sheikh Obama.
Oh.
Ouch.
Hey.
Foreign intrigue,
yes. But I will read your article tonight, Gotti, and if I have any questions, I'll give you a shout.
Well, I appreciate that.
And thank you for the Radio Jihad plug.
Yeah,
definitely check that out. I had to get that in there sooner or later, but I finally figured out a way to get Radio Jihad in the article.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
All right,
not
guys.
Not a problem, gentlemen.
Have a good evening.
Yes, you too.
And I'll talk to you guys. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. I'll talk to one of you at least tomorrow.
All right. Hey, and thanks for bringing this guy on for. What's that?
Yeah, I'm gonna send him an email right now. His name is Gary Johnson Jr.
Okay.
Sounds like a NASCAR driver now that I think about it, Gary Johnson Jr. But and he made a left turn. And he made another left turn. But I'm going to send him an email right now inviting him for next Tuesday. If you don't hear back from me, then we're good for next Tuesday. I'll only write you back if there's for some reason he can't make it. And then that way, well, actually, I'll let you know what he says, and then that way you can throw it on your on the website, and if you want to kind of put a little blog in there that he's going to be on next Tuesday. And he's just got to call in the same number we all use?
Yes.
All right, not a problem. I'll shoot him an email as soon as we get off the phone.
All right.
Ciao, guys.
All right.
All right,
John.
Have a fun-filled jihad kind of night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.